and the League of Women Voters of Montrose County, which also includes Delta County, by the way, would just like to welcome all of you to this evening's DMEA Candidate Forum. My name is Karen Connor, and I am currently the president of the Montrose League of Women Voters and will also be your moderator for this evening. Candidates for the open DMEA board positions are District 3, we have incumbent Ed Marston and Olin Lund. District 4, we have candidates Jim Elder and Erica Lewis Kennedy. And for the South Region, we have incumbent Tony Prendergast and his opponent Kay Heinschel. So we'll get started with the opening statements.
Hi, I'm Jim Elder, and this is the first time in political office that I've decided to get involved in, and with my luck, my opponent is a Kennedy, so I already have competition here. As an electric cooperative, DMEA faces many challenges and opportunities. Some of the issues facing DMEA in the next several years are rising electric rates, the contract with the Tri-State, Senate Bill 252, utilizing the current fiber optic lines that we have, low employee morale, and so on. There's many other issues, too. The economy here on the Western Slope is dragging. There's families struggling to pay bills, farmers dealing with rising cost, and small businesses trying to keep their doors open. And so DMEA needs solid leadership and experienced board members that can think outside the box to keep rates low and service high.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Erica Lewis Kennedy, and I'm running Jim for the District 4 seat. And just a little bit about me, history, long time here in the Valley, but why I wanted to serve and actually had wanted to previously run for the DMEA board, but it just didn't work out with the districts, is that I think DMEA has done an excellent job in the past and would love to see that work continued in the future. I have no agenda. I'm running because I am a consummate researcher. I like to do my homework. I enjoy reading budget documents and not being spoon-fed information. So why I'm running is I'm a small business owner, I have a young family here, and I want to see our region succeed and grow and be able to have jobs and just be a responsible electric co-op. So I'm running for office. I have extensive utility management experience in the past. I'm a two-time mayor of the city of Montrose, and so have a lot of experience meetings, budgets, policy, but also the ability to talk to people. Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you for being here. My name is Olin Lund. I am running for District 3 against Ed. I thought that the best thing for me to do to start off here is to give you some idea of what my background is. I was born and raised in the east end of Delta County. He's watching his clock already. I'm getting nervous. I was the third generation of my family to graduate from Fountain High School. I graduated then from the Colorado School of Mines and then with a degree in welding engineering from Ohio State University. Married my wife in Ohio. We have three children. One's working, one's in college, one's in high school. I worked for several years after graduating from Ohio State for Caterpillar. Then returned to Paonia after setting up a business there and running that. Ran for Delta County Commissioner, was elected twice. Then I finish up right now. He says stop. Okay, we'll get there.
So during my 39 years in Paonia, I've redeveloped 23,000 square feet on Paonia's main street. My 20 tenants and I pay $1,100 a month to DMEA. I have skin in the game. I've been on and off the board since 1983. The ranchers on my 1983 board said I was their first hippie director. That board was tough. It ran the co-op, but later boards let staff take over its job. No longer. The present board took back its responsibilities this year by ordering an assessment of board and staff. When the three directors first began pushing an assessment, 20 or more managers started coming to every board meeting. In reaction to this, a majority gradually got behind the assessments. Among other things, we wanted to know if average annual compensation of $193,000 for DMEA's seven top managers makes sense. Reelect me so I can help implement the assessment. Your rates depend on it.
Yes. Oh, you got number one, didn't you? Okay, go ahead. I want to thank you all for being here. I think it's really important that we have an involved public in the DMEA, involved in the DMEA governance and the board. This past year, I've been a board director for 6 years, and this past year has been unusual. And I think it's very much time for the public to provide scrutiny to what the board is doing. And I would like to be part of promoting that and welcoming you all into that conversation. I think the election serves very important for that purpose. There are some big issues on the table. Tri-State is one. We need to improve the governance of Tri-State, and that is 70% of our costs, and we need to continue to get a handle on that. But Tri-State is not the enemy, and we also rely on them for our power here every day. So I think that it's really important that we have a good relationship with them. Also, local economic development is a major issue that DMEA can be involved in, and that's another one that I'm very much supportive of. Thank you.
Now can I go? Hi, I'm Kay Heinchel. I want to first thank DMEA for hosting this forum. Thank the League of Women Voters and thank the other candidates for being here. I want to explain why I'm running. One of the things I went and looked at first, I went and reminded myself what the mission statement is for DMEA. And it's just kind of like what you see on the police cars. The policemen say protect and serve. DMEA says energize and serve. So then I went and I looked and reminded myself what the vision statement is. And the vision statement says we're going to have low cost, reliable, safe power. I have 40 years of experience in the power industry. I've been doing this my entire career, and that's why I feel I'm qualified to serve on the board. And if you'll elect me, I'll represent you, all 33,000 members on the board. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The first question to be asked is from Betty Nickel.
Okay, my question has to do with the audit that the management audit that the board recently approved. And my question has to do with full disclosure of what that audit reveals. And I would like to know, do you support full disclosure? And how would you get that out to the member owners? Thank you.
Okay. First of all, I think as a business owner, we have many businesses in town that pay me a fee for third-party opinion and consulting. And so therefore, I am a fan of using audits and companies to audit firms and to evaluate that. However, full disclosure, I'm in favor of disclosure. However, if there's anything sensitive, anything personal that could affect employees or personal operation, I'm not for that. But in general, I'm for audits that they can go through, look at how the operations work, how our systems in place, and so on.
Audits are essential for running a fiscally responsible environment. However, anytime you take a document to that effect, you need to take it with a grain of salt. You need to know what the numbers reflect and what the rate of return is. Understanding what numbers mean, what your service, what you're getting back, and where you can save with good management is very important. So I believe in audits, but you need to know what information you're getting and use it in a responsible context. With regard to full disclosure, yes, absolutely, unless in fact it is personal information that would be harmful to a party.
Are you ready? Yes. I'll follow that with yes, certainly. Full disclosure, my agenda is really the members of DMEA, the co-op members. From past experience, there are things that we need to be careful of. We must be careful of employee relations, negotiations with employees, those sorts of things. So in that case, why the full disclosure would have to be tempered, but yes, my agenda, yes, I would like to fully disclose everything. My agenda is the people that own the company.
Yeah. I think the management audit we've undertaken is a great idea, and I would be in favor of disclosing as much as is legally sensible. There are things you can't disclose. This is a company, and there are some things that aren't disclosable and shouldn't be disclosed, but to the extent possible, yes.
Mr. Heinzel?
Okay, yeah. I think that the other candidates have pretty well explained the full disclosure in the audit, and I would agree that I think that we need to get disclosure on this. There are sensitive issues, which I think you have to protect. The other part of that question that nobody has really addressed yet was how do you do it? And I think as a board, you have to discuss that. You know, do you put it out a separate mailing? Do you then have that reviewed by your legal counsel? You know, exactly how do you do that? And I think that's one of the things that we'd have to address as a board, as a group, how we're going to do that. I don't think you want to put it out in anything informal, you know, on the page with the recipes in the newsletter. I think it's a serious issue, and I think it needs to be taken seriously. Thank you.
Mr. Prendergast?
Yes. The general assessment should be released with specific personnel items, you know, might be sensitive and need to be redacted. But overall, I think it'll be a very important document. I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to sharing it with the membership. It was originally proposed as a management audit. We then, through discussion throughout the last entire year, moved it to an organizational audit and include an audit of the board's governance process. And so I think all of it will be important to take a look at.
Thank you. The next question has been submitted by Jerry Witt, and she's asked, and I've been asked to read it. And we'll start with Mr. Lund on this question. In 1 minute or less, what is your understanding of the key elements of Senate Bill 252, and where do you stand on this bill, and why?
Okay, my concern, I'll try and be quick here. Senate Bill 252 is really geared to the urban areas, which we are not in the urban area. There is talk, the numbers I have been told, is it will be an added burden of $2,000 per meter on average. I know certainly the farmers are concerned because they think that they're going to hit, or they recognize that they're going to get hit very hard by Senate Bill 252. Given that, with Senate Bill 252, if it does get signed by the governor and enacted as law, it is something there that we'll have to look at how we can work with it, on the best way that we can do that. And I think it offers some real opportunities to work with Tri-State in doing that. Again, a discussion of the board to work that out, the best way to do that.
This board and myself would have liked to have 252 amended somewhat, but on balance, it's a good bill. Our rates have been held steady this year because of renewable energy, because of the South Canal project. If we could get at the coal mine methane, which is a renewable energy that's coming out of our coal mines, we could drop our rates. Tri-State has one desire, and that is to build a very large coal-fired power plant in Kansas and ship us the power back here. And this is all about Tri-State and its desire to build huge transmission and central station power plants. If this comes in, they're going to be hard put to do it. And when they build that Holcomb plant, if they build it, they will put nuclear out of business. Tri-State is not innocent in this matter.
We got involved in looking at 252 while I was still in the Senate, and we were trying to insert language in there that would allow us to bump past our 5% cap currently on local distributed generation, our 5% cap in the contract with Tri-State. We were not able to get that through, but so we chose not to support it without having more of a local benefit. As far as the overall bill goes, 20% by 2020, 2% rate cap, there's going to be a lot of implementation dilemmas with it, I think. It was a hasty bill. but I think we'll survive it. I don't think it's going to be quite as dire as Tri-State has predicted.
In addition to the amendment that Tony talked about, there was also an amendment that said that the 20% or the 10% increase over what we already have should best be generated within the state of Colorado, so we had local jobs and local resources which would continue to bring money into the area. Well, unfortunately, that that amendment didn't survive the Senate's second reading on that bill. And unfortunately, I'm afraid that Tri-State may, in 7 years or a short time, they may go across the state line, buy that renewable energy, and then pass 100% of the cost of that off to the members, DMEA included. And I think it's a pity that we're having that dictated to us by the state government, but we don't get to choose all of that, so we have to go with the consequences. And that was the end.
Okay, those of you in District 4?
For Senate Bill 252, I am not a fan of mandated government rules where it's requiring certain percentage for alternative energy. My background, I ran a solar energy company back in the 80s, and alternative energy works, but when you have government rules requiring to have energy generated through alternative energy, I do not think that's a wise idea. Let it be in the free marketplace. My concern is that when they require the 20%, Tri-State is going to be forced to go outside of Colorado, outside of this area, to find other areas that can produce that energy.
My concerns lie that when I read House Bill 252, or excuse me, Senate Bill 252, that it has been hastily pushed. I feel that our rural area is being pitted against the more urban areas, and that's never a win on the state level. And I also have great concerns for the agricultural area. And so I think there is too little information coming fast, and we just don't know enough, and I don't support it. Whereas I do really like the idea of renewable energies, I just don't like the mandate coming down.
Thank you. The next question has been submitted by Mark Eckhart.
My name is Mark Eckhart. I'm a former DMEA board member. I have supplied the board with a 2011-990 form regarding wage and benefit compensation for the top seven employees here at DMEA. This information is of public record. My question is, as this 990 information is disseminated widely among DMEA member and ratepayers, your constituents may ask you, do you support these types of wages and benefits along with the fact that DMEA employees receive two pension plans, defined benefit, and defined contribution, and they do not contribute a single dollar of their own wages to either pension plan?
So that's a very good question, a very relevant and important question, and one that we've dealt with in the boardroom quite a bit. What we need to do is be able to attract and retain qualified employees that keep up the highly technological infrastructure of DMEA and keep up the reliability and affordability of our power and allow us to keep moving forward to meet some of the challenges in the future related to Tri-State, related to local economic development, related to a diverse power supply. That takes expertise, and we need to be in the marketplace for that. I would support the studies that help show where you're at in the marketplace relative to others, but the studies that we have done show that we are in the hunt on that. I don't think we should pay a penny more, but we don't want to lose people. So that's where we need to be on that one.
Yeah, I think Tony makes some good points. These numbers don't surprise me from the industry that I came from, but in a community as small as Montrose, and certainly with 17% unemployment, yeah, they look real high. I agree that you have to attract good people, and Most of the people on this list are probably approaching retirement. I'm not sure on every one of them, but I've been around and I know most of them. So, you know, their wages have grown pretty substantially since they joined. So I think what you're going to see is, as those people retire, I think you're going to see people come in, and they may not be at this high of a wage. I would like to see a salary survey also that includes not just other co-ops, but other businesses within the Delta Montrose service area. What are the school teachers paid? What are other businesses right here in the community paid?
Now here to District 4.
Okay, I've had a chance to meet with most of these top staff members personally, one-on-one, and boy, the intellect capital that is there, the brain power, is amazing. I was frantically writing notes when I'm meeting with them. To replace these people would take a big effort to try to find somebody else that would have the understanding on how to run this utility. You do need to compensate. You need to have it be competitive in the marketplace. And so if somebody's proposing to remove these employees or lower the wages, then who are you going to get to replace them? So there's a lot of experience, a lot of knowledge on how to run this utility. It's not just a simple little business. There's a lot of complexities to it.
I do think that you need to stay competitive, strong recruitment. There's nothing worse than bringing someone in, training them, and then having them go to the front range, and you pay double the money to train someone else. The intellectual capital, as Jim mentioned, is imperative. And also here tonight, we hear about the great projects, such as the South Canal Hydro Project. Saves DMA $1 million. Who do you think came up with that idea? A board? No, I think it was probably hardworking staff who think out of the box and push. You have to have a hardworking board, but you have to have staff that brings you ideas and you can research together to keep things viable. Also, what's missing from this 990, people should know that, yes, as a board of directors, you do make a monthly stipend. Typically, those wages, if you add them up on a year, average this one of these salaries. You get what you pay for.
What I want to say in answer to that question is the most important asset of any group, any company, is their employees. And certainly you want to attract talent. You know, Delta County is also a part of this case, just to throw that in. But we're not in a real wealthy economic area, so no, we can't compete with just that. We've got to look at a larger area. There are opportunities for people with talent that are much wider ranging than just other businesses in Delta and Montrose counties. Again, we don't want to slight them. Those employees are the most important asset that the company has.
So I was on the board. I've been on the board for 18 years, and it wasn't until last year when I downloaded this from the internet that I saw most of the numbers on there. They were not given to us as they should have been. And when I saw the numbers, I don't try to answer whether these are appropriate or not. They look interesting to me at $190,000 plus when school superintendents make substantially less than that, city managers make substantially less than that, and we're talking average. And so that's why I began to push with my colleagues. Some of my colleagues began to push for a management assessment, and we got tremendous pushback to our efforts to have a management assessment, and it took almost a year to push it through the board. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you if these numbers are high, if they're low, if they're wonderful. That's why we wanted to bring in outside professionals. And let me tell you, that wasn't easy.
Thank you. The next question person is Sherman Hebein.
When will I get my capital credits back, and what is your view of capital credit?
And we will start back up here with Erica.
Capital credits are a very important part of the co-op. They retired them out at 20 and 25 years. That's the current trend. I'm also a believer of reinvesting some of those capital credits into capital infrastructure. Sometimes with your bond rates and things like that, you can build things at a much cheaper rate and build infrastructure to keep your rates down consistently over the future. As to changing that, that could be a possibility. However, do your homework and understanding how those rates work and how infrastructure works and how you can buy the cost down is very important, and taking all those factors into weigh properly.
Okay. Using capital credits is an awesome tool for co-ops. However, this is your money, and it needs to be returned back to you after it's served its purpose. And so I believe that after it's gone through and utilized for improvements through that, I'd like to see that money go back to the member owners. Because you're the owner of the co-op, and it's your money.
Thank you. District 3?
So, I don't know how old you are. But
60.
60, okay. The quickest way to get your capital credits back all at once is to die. We'll write you a check. But I think it's not proper that we've been hanging on to capital credits into 25 years out. And it especially hurts people like you and me, I assume, who've been on the system for a long time. We contribute capital credits to DMEA every year as part of our bill, and it ought to be rotated on no more than a 20-year cycle, preferably shorter. And we're not doing that. And there's great resistance within the board to do it. And so, that's what I say, and we're chintzy when we do it. Not only that, but Tri-State has, I can't remember the number, about 25 million of our capital credits also, your capital credits. And they're even chintzier with it. So it's not, the co-op thing is to rotate capital credits. We're not.
My position on that situation on that is I would, as a challenger, not as an incumbent here, that's something I would have to look into. I really can't give you an answer now. I don't know. Would have to look into what the situation is, what needs to be done. All I can do is fall back on my agenda is the members of the co-op and low-cost electricity, low-cost, reliable electricity.
I agree with some of what everybody said over here. I think I understand a little bit about capital credits, but I won't sit here and tell you that I know as much as the board members know about capital credits. But I have read the presentation that was given to us by DMEA, and I will tell you that I've had some conversation beyond that. Yeah, there's a reason that they can maybe borrow money at a lower rate if they have some capital, some cash in the company, but I think that that's sufficient, what they have now. And I think capital credits ought to be returned. Every time they get money from Tri-State, I think it ought to get passed right on over to the members.
The short answer is yes, I think we should return capital credits on a regular basis, but not necessarily every year. Those years we've absorbed rate increases from Tri-State, part of that was because we are able to use our equity in this company to, your equity in this company to absorb those rate increases. I don't think we should do that as a matter of course all the time because we get behind, but there's a time, like in 2009 when the rate increase came, times are really tight in this community, and we absorbed a rate increase for 3 years. It helped people out in this community. And we did that because we didn't return capital credits for a couple of those years. As a board president a year ago, I drove through a policy that ensured that the board would review the retirement capital credits every year, and also promoted taking it out of the election cycle so that it didn't become a political issue for board members.
Thank you.